Hello and welcome to Radio SGN. I am one of your humble hosts, A.V. Eichenbaum, pronouns they, them. With me, as per usual, is Lindsay Anderson, pronouns she, her. Lindsay, how are you today?
Doing good. I'm trying not to burp into the mic because I just ate some Nutella toast and it was very delicious.
That reminds me, I keep forgetting to eat. That is something I do sometimes. Sometimes you get really into what you're doing, you know?
I do know, yeah.
And then you just forget to eat for a couple of days. And, you know, that's not healthy.
Monday's our deadline day, and I have to go to a coffee shop, not only because I need to be around other people doing work to feel like I have to, like, stay, you know, on task and keep doing my work, but it also, like, forces me to get a food and eat that food because I'm like, oh, I paid for this. It's right in front of me. I have to eat it. Otherwise, I will sit at my desk for, like, 10 hours and, yeah, not eat or drink.
100%. I understand that quite a bit. Yeah, it's been an interesting week to be a neurodivergent person. Seattle's weather shifts. Do you get screwed up by the weather? We talked about this a little bit, but like the gray day, then the sunny day, then the gray, then the sunny. It has given my seasonal affective disorder hell this week. Today is a good day. Today, I feel on task. I got a haircut. I feel pretty fly. People don't say fly anymore, but that's how I'm feeling. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Also, it sounds weird when I say it.
When you say fly?
Yeah, I'm like, oh man, that's pretty fly, dude.
Yeah, you kind of sound like a cartoon character.
Thank you.
From like the 50s.
Great. I do voiceover work if anyone needs it.
Oh, well, I was going to say the seasonal affective disorder for sure. I definitely feel that. But one thing with me is my family has like this weird chronic migraine thing. So like my grandma got chronic migraines, my mom gets chronic migraines, and now I'm starting to develop them. It like kicks in around early 20s. And my mom says it's a change in the barometer, but when the weather like flips on a dime, I will get like such a bad migraine. And I had one the other day and I was calling my mom and she's like, oh, I'm homesick with a migraine. And it's just this connection we have where I'm like, I know when my mom's got a headache because I've got one too. And she's like, yeah, it's the weather. And I don't know if that's true, but I will blame the weather for it.
That seems like something that would be in a Disney movie. Like, oh, I'm so connected to this person who looks exactly like me. We get headaches at the same time, too.
Yeah.
We must be witches.
No, me and my mom are witches. Like, we have a psychic connection. When I was a kid, we used to play Trivial Pursuit. Mm-hmm. And my mom would, she would read the card, and I'd be like 8 or 9. And there was no way I was going to know the answer. And she'd be like, I'm going to think the answer really hard to you. And I would, like, concentrate really hard, and I would get it. She's like, how the hell do you know these things? I didn't. It was just our psychic abilities. That, and we have similar dreams. The other day, my mom called me and was like, I had a dream that we were both in New York together. And I was like, oh my God, I had the same dream. We were in New York.
Shout out to Twitches and Twitches 2.
Yes.
Classic Disney made-for-TV movies that I feel like you're just describing the plot of Twitches. And I know that you're not, but I love every second of it. Speaking of witches, in the paper this week, Dan Lindsley, who is, of course, editing this episode, wrote about AmptGuard, which is all about LARP camp. And who doesn't love running around the woods pretending to be a wizard? I know I sure do. Can we talk about this real quick before we go to our ads? Because I'm stoked that this came through. I've never done LARPing myself. I'm not that kind of nerd. I play games with dice. And I play make-believe with added math. That's the kind of nerd I am. This is a lot more physical activity than I am used to, but it does seem very exciting. Maybe the SGN should do a LARP camp thing. Do you want to be like a battle mage or something?
Absolutely not. No.
That's okay.
Sorry, that is not the kind of nerd I am either. I went to we talked about this, the Renaissance Fair, and that was
I feel like
out
you were a
element.
Horse girl at some point, right?
Yeah, I was.
You are this type of nerd.
The horse girls?
Horse girls become LARPers sometimes, man, and that's okay. There's no shame in it. I feel like LARP gets a bad rap because it's throwing beanbags at people and saying fireball, but hey, they're active.
Yeah.
They're very excited and generous with wanting people to do this thing. It's like improv with a little extra.
Yeah. Would you like classify those groups that did like Quidditch? Is it Quidditch on college campuses as LARP? Is that a form of
I would say that it's very athletic LARP. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. My friend Kat was on the Quidditch team at UC Irvine.
Shout out Kat.
Yeah. Shout out Kat, who does not remember me probably. Go aardvarks.
You'd think they would choose like a magical animal. Why aardvark?
UC Irvine is the aardvarks.
Oh, okay.
It was a college-sanctioned Quidditch team.
Okay, never mind.
The Banana Slugs, however, at UC Santa Cruz, did not have a Quidditch team, nor did Cabrillo, nor did Gavilan.
Interesting.
Three colleges where I spent time. Didn't actually get into UCSC, but their students wanted me in a lot of their, like, productions and short films.
Cool.
Yeah, beautiful campus. Anyway, when Dan Lindsley writes about nerd stuff, he gets really into it. It's always something new. Like, these are subcultures that I'm familiar with, usually, when Dan and I discuss what he's going to be writing about. But he always uncovers something that I didn't know before, and it really, genuinely, is enjoyable reading, you know? So, go check that out. I'm not just saying that because he edits the show and makes us sound good. It really is a really solid piece of work. We've got so much more coming your way in this episode. I've got a great interview with Jason June. You're gonna meet him, and just a ray of sunshine through and through. An absolute pleasure. And then after that, we're gonna talk about some other stuff, like the right wing and their sort of backlash to everything queer these days.
And we'll talk about anal cancer.
Sure. All that and more.
Was I too excited when I said anal cancer?
All that and more after these messages.
Hi, this is Dr. V. Hill with V. Hill Family Medicine. Ever wish your doctor knew you by name, understood where you were coming from, and listened to your unique health concerns and worries? I have built just such a practice where the focus is on you and the care delivered is in line with your values and ideals. Learn more about affirming primary care at V. Hill Family Medicine. Visit viglmd.com or call 253-693-0071.
Now part of the Seattle Gay News Podcast Network, being yourself loudly illuminates the beautiful and chaotic path of becoming the best version of yourself, even if your brain is a bit chemically imbalanced. Whether you're seeking affirmation that there is more to life than just work, or you're looking for insight on how to live a more intentional life, I am your host, Isabel Mata, and I am here to serve up exactly what you need to hear. Your mental health doesn't define you. It's how you work with it, not against it, that does. Being Yourself Loudly is free to listen to and available wherever you stream your podcasts.
It's the sexiest time of year. This Friday kicks off the Seattle Erotic Art Festival at Seattle Center Exhibition Hall, running April 21st, 22nd, and 23rd. A weekend of titillating art, sensational performances, literary readings, interactive experiences, dance parties, and more. 21 years running, this festival is always a good time. In conjunction with the festival, be sure to check out the second annual Pan Eros Film Festival, featuring erotic films from around the world. Learn more and get your tickets today at seattleerotic.org. Use the discount code SEAFSGN at checkout for 10% off. Joining me today via Zoom, he's a New York Times bestselling author. You may know him from Out of the Blue or Jay's Gay Agenda or any number of books for young adults and younger readers. Please welcome to the show, Jason June. Jason June, how are you?
I am doing so well. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm thrilled to have you on the show. We were just talking right before we started recording, and you are an SGN alum. You made it out. How are you doing?
Yeah, in the summer of 2009, I worked selling ads as a summer job with George Bacon and Sean Niddle. It was so much fun.
Did you work with Maggie Bloodstone?
Yes, absolutely.
She still works here.
Ah,
she is still here.
Is absolutely amazing. I mean, it was so long ago. I don't even know if she remembers me. And I'm like, I literally am an entirely different person. I used to just be this little early 20s something twink. And now I'm like Laura Dern.
Well, it's great to have you back. Thank you so much for joining us here in the studio, so to speak. Let's talk about you and your career. So Jay's Gay Agenda and Out of the Blue, I believe Lindsay did a book club with you recently. Lindsay Anderson is our book reviewer often, or book club person. She's also the co-host of the show. So you guys talked a little bit about that already for the paper, but why did you get into writing young adult novels?
I was really drawn to young adult because that was something that in my high school career, I graduated from high school in 2006. And I used to be this avid reader from my childhood, from literally kindergarten, all the way through the very beginning of my high school journey. And then I just stopped all of a sudden. And I realized in hindsight, it was because I didn't see characters in books that were like me. I could name on less than one hand books that I knew about that had gay characters in them. And most of them were sort of traumatic or painful coming out stories. And I do think coming out stories serve a really important part in our whole gay literature canon.
Mm-hmm.
But also it got to the point where it just made me sad to not see myself. And then the only time I did see myself was in stories where I felt like the main character was just going through really terrible things. And so when I got into writing, I really wanted to create joy-filled, funny, queer stories that talked about the realities of what it's like to be a queer teen, whether it's the awkwardness of being one of the only few queer people in your community and not being able to really be in relationships as much as you want because there's not very many queer people around you, or whether it's just the awkwardnesses of being a post-pubescent teen that's just horny all the time. It's just fun to be able to talk about the hysterical aspects of humanity, but through a gay lens.
Yeah, a lot of what we hear from writers that come on the show talking about their, I guess, gay agenda, right? It's when we tell our own stories and then people say, actually, just a couple of weeks ago, we talked about this with Tilly Bridges, who is a writer for television. But it's like, we want queer stories, but not like that, right? Like people have glommed onto this idea that if it's a good gay story, if it's a good queer story, it kind of has to be sad. That was like a really big part of the culture back, I guess, when we started having all of these things show up, right? And like Glee was a problem. We don't have to talk about Glee, but I've been thinking about this a lot. Just the pressure that a show like Glee put on queer teens and people like us to come out to their family in a really big, ostentatious way, or for people to encourage their friends to come out, or like to out their friends, like straight allies or whatever, to out their friends for that reason. And yeah, there's been a lot of suffering in the media of queer folks. It's almost like we're being forced into a hegemony of tragedy. And what I like about your books is you don't do that at all. It is very joyful and very light. And you do seem to have sort of a mermaid bias. And I'd love to talk to you about that. So Out of the Blue is a merman mermaid story. And then you have the Mermicorn kid series.
Yes.
What's going on there?
I've been obsessed with merpeople since I can remember. The very first movie I ever saw in the theater was The Little Mermaid. And I was just so in love. This whole idea of being underwater all the time, not with these human worries where everybody's got a fin. In my adulthood, I realized there is something freeing where it's like we're not talking about genitals all the time, which is the really bizarre thing about humanity, where especially straight humanity is constantly focused on genitals, yet frame it as if people who are queer are somehow the perverts when they're the ones obsessed with what's between our legs. I always say, you know, hearts over parts. The parts part of our humanity is also really important for so many of us, but we get to choose who we share that with. And I think in our day-to-day interactions with humans in general, when they're not romantic or sexual partners, we should be focusing on each other's heart and the energy they give out, and worrying less about people with certain parts displaying their gender in certain ways. And that to me is what's really magical about mer people, especially in Out of the Blue. I explore this a lot, this gender aspect of it all. And I'm not the first person to pick up on the queer undertones of mer people by any means. And then with Mermicorn Island, because it's a kid's series, and so I'm getting way less deep into gender and sexuality in that. But I do find that there is something freeing where even that world is not based on, okay, here's what boys do and here's what girls do. It's just like, here's what we do, we in Mermicorn Island. And that's been really nice to have that. And I hope it's a good escape for kids that feel extra pressure from sort of that hyper straight binary framework we have going on in our society.
Is it stressful right now to be a member of the LGBTQ community and author when people are just taking books off the shelves right and left, banning books right and left?
Totally. It really is stressful. It's weird because the reason we're seeing such a concerted effort to ban and censor queer books and also books by and about people of color is mm-hmm. because we have entered a golden age of queer literature where more books than ever are being written by queer people about all letters of the queer experience. And there's still more work to do to make sure we're all represented in terms of not just letters in our queerness, but in terms of race and religion and socioeconomic status and location in the country or the world. There's such a plethora of human experience that we can portray. But we've been making leaps and bounds in those portrayals in publishing. And that's why this effort is really huge right now, is because they're seeing how successful queer authors are becoming. And I don't necessarily mean financially, but I mean successful at telling our stories. And that scares these people behind the book bans for whatever reason that they can hopefully someday discuss with the therapist. Although a lot of them, I imagine, don't go to therapy. But but it is stressful right now only in that. I say only in that, and that's the wrong way to put that. In that, there's a lot of reasons why it's stressful. First and foremost, it's because it's doing queer teens a major disservice in not getting to have access to books with people who are like them that wrote the book and with people who are like them that are in the book. Just like I was saying before, I didn't see myself in books when I was a teen reader, and it made me stop reading. And it also contributed to my overall state of mind about society and about how things would be for my life. Like, I literally could not imagine my life after 30. And for me, not in a way that was suicidal or anything, but in a way where it was like, I literally could not see, I just didn't have examples of what it meant to be a gay person and a queer person over the age of 30. And then Will and Grace came along, and there was Will and Jack, and it was great to see them. And I'm really thankful for that TV show in that it being one of the dominoes that started this effect in showing the queer experience. But they weren't people that I really related to necessarily.
Right.
And we need to have the books today so that queer teens understand the beautiful tapestry that is humanity, all the options that are there out for them so they don't feel alone. And then it's also stressful, especially with things like Mermicorn Island. It's so bizarre. The only mention of queerness in Mermicorn Island is that the dolphin character, Echo, has two dads. I don't even say two gay dads. I just say these are her two dads, Dalton and Phineas. So their ship name can be Dolphin, and they're dolphins. I loved that a lot. And it's also biologically very accurate. Dolphins are widely known in the marine biology community as displaying homosexual behavior. I don't talk about, you know, what that behavior is and its physicality. I just say that a character has two dads. And from that alone, that's where I get my most violent threats. I'll get death threats and
really
kill your local pedophile on my Instagram posts whenever a bigoted parent sees a dolphin that has two dads displayed in really cute cartoons in the Scholastic Book Fair. And that's when I get these targeted.
That is absolutely heartbreaking.
There's just all kinds of things that we're going through right now as queer authors.
Yeah. And, you know, I remember the Scholastic Book Fairs as being like a place of warmth and kindness, and, you know, maybe it's nostalgia working its way into me. I kind of miss like Windows 95 a little bit, but but yeah, I can't imagine finding a book that you relate to as a kid, bringing it home and having your parent like write the author with just slurs and just, what does that do to the kid also?
Right.
Right. Cause you know, the kid's getting punished for reading, quote, that filth, right?
Yeah.
Oh, that is truly heartbreaking. Let's talk a little bit more about representation, cause we're closing in on our time together here. Do you have any examples in media of what you consider good queer representation, or it could be books, it can be TV, things that you find that you relate to?
Oh my gosh, totally. The first thing that's coming to mind is Stephen Salvatore's Can't Take That Away. And that was their debut young adult novel that came out a couple years ago now. And in Can't Take That Away, Carrie is the lead protagonist and they are genderqueer and they're trying out for the role of Elphaba in Wicked. And that gets a lot of their community members worked up about what that means, that they're perceiving this student as male trying to be Elphaba. And it was just such a magical experience to read Carrie say things about their genderqueer experience that were literally verbatim things that I've said about myself and my own body. And Carrie has this whole moment where they're talking about how much they hate their facial hair. Some of those sentences I've straight up, I literally have said word for word. And now Steven and I are friends. And I was like, Steven, I feel like you were inside of my head when you wrote this, because it's exactly what I've said about, you know, I've been through a whole lasering journey with my facial hair. I am gay and I identify as femme. And it's just really amazing to find people that see me. And even beforehand, Steven and I had never even met, but it was just like, it's amazing to find somebody that just gets it.
That is
so one that definitely sticks out.
That is one of those feelings that when someone does just get it, I think it's not unique to the queer experience, but it does feel a lot more rewarding.
Oh, I was also going to recommend Johnny Garzavilla's 1500 Miles from the Sun. It's an amazing story about a kid that drunkenly comes out on Twitter and then starts this long distance relationship with another guy through Twitter. It's just so wholesome and magical. Johnny does such a great job about portraying the realities of coming out when your home environment isn't necessarily safe or accepting yet. Mm. The main character's father is not jazzed about him coming out. And Johnny does such a beautiful job about showing all of the magic that comes about once you start coming out and still some of the pain that can happen. And I feel like they didn't shy away from showing that just because you can go through pain and very real pain, it doesn't mean that's going to overshadow the beauty of this journey for you. And the whole story ends on such a nice feeling of hope that I feel like 1500 Miles from the Sun just should be on everybody's must-read coming out story shelf.
Well, great. Thank you so much for those recommendations. Listeners at home, be sure to check out those books. Keep on looking out for those book clubs. We do continue to do book recommendations every week. So like I was saying, we're almost up on our time here. Where can people find you online?
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram and TikTok because I'm keeping up with the kids at Hey Jason June. And you can also find me on my website at heyjasonjune.com. And on all of those platforms, you'll find out even more about my most recent release coming out in May, which is called Riley Weaver Needs a Date to the Gaybutante Ball. And it's all about the hijinks that happen when you're dating while gay and femme, the ups and downs of gay guys and some of their preconceived notions about when you present feminine.
Mm. Is there anything that you would like to say to our listeners before we head out?
First of all, just you're amazing, listener. Wherever you are so fabulous. And read all the time and read outside of your experience, within your experience. It's just now more than ever, we need to find our common ground of humanity. Books are such a great way to do that. And again, that goes back to why people are trying to ban them, is that they just link us all together. And even when at first glance you think there's a character or a story you might not relate to, I would still say, give it a shot, because you'll be surprised the things you find that we all have in common.
Fantastic. Thank you, Jason June, so much for being on the show. And I'd love to have you back sometime.
Thank you so much, Ash. I would definitely come back.
And we're back. Again, thanks to Jason June for being just such a spectacular guest. Just fantastic.
And what a connection we have to Jason June, too.
He
worked at the SGN.
Yes, we talked about that. And wild. What a small world, right?
Yeah.
It's nice to see people who saw the SGN as it was coming in and being like, wow, this is not bad. You know what I mean? And that's a personal point of pride for me. But it's also really great to be connected to that history and that history of activism in general through the ages. And it's 2009 is when I started my journalism career. I was 14.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's crazy. It's crazy to know where people were at certain times. Let's talk about Mopop before we get into some heavier stuff. Mopop's doing a Dragtastic summer camp for kids. It is called Dragtastic, which is great.
It's a very clever name.
The Art of Drag Camp.
Well, Mopop does all kinds of cool camps for kids in the summer, right? Like the STEM Explorers Camp and Rock and Rolling Camp.
Yeah.
But this one's special. It's like theater kids on crack, kind of, you know, to introduce kids to drag so young. And I love it because I wish that there was more outlets for like queer kids when I was a queer kid.
Sure, yeah.
But yeah, I know you have some opinions on this as well.
No, I absolutely, of course I have opinions on it. I'm me. I think it's great that it's being provided. I think that it's a wonderful service. But I remember going to like day camps as a kid when I could, where most of the time we would just like go back into the backwoods and throw each other down. It was during like garlic collection season. We'd roll down hills in garlic barrels. That was my day camp experience for the most part. But I can't imagine that there are a lot of kids, hear me out now, that are saying, I want to go to drag camp. It's hard for me to picture. I can imagine a lot more parents being like, hey, we want you to be inclusive. We're going to make you do this because we want to feel cool and hip. I feel like millennial parents especially might lean in that direction where it's like, hey, I think it would be cool if I did drag camp when I was a kid, so you're going to do drag camp. And it's a very strange sort of like living vicariously. Maybe I just think the worst of people because I had a very weird upbringing, but like, I don't know how many kids watch RuPaul's Drag Race or Dragula. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I think that there's been a big trend of like drag queens doing story hours at the library. So kids are exposed there and they might. And I'm thinking like maybe not even like little queer kids, but sometimes little cishet girls that see drag queens and are like, oh my gosh, I want to just dress up and dance. Like my little sister would have ate up drag camp. And, you know, it's a great exposure for kids to begin becoming allies, too. I think that that's really important. So if you have a kid that, like I said, is maybe a cishet gender-conforming girl that wants to do drag camp, like, that's a great way for her to become open-minded and also get to dress up and dip their toe in, like, theater culture, kind of.
Absolutely. I'm not saying it's a negative thing that this camp is being offered. I don't know what kids think is hip right now, I guess is what I'm saying. Yeah. I just don't know. We got a lot of our photos from Mopop directly. Thank you, Mopop, for letting us use your photos. There is a kid in camo gray shorts and bright pink New Balance tennis shoes wearing an oversized pose t-shirt doing the sassiest pose I have ever seen in my life. It is the best photo I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, it deserves a museum plaque.
It deserves a museum plaque. It deserves a Pulitzer. My only problem is that this pose t-shirt this kid is wearing, no child should ever wear that font.
What?
I hate that font.
What font even is it?
It's too professional. It's like Times New Roman on steroids. Kids should be wearing something frivolous, like Comic Sans. Kids these days.
You know, this is a serious kid. He's taking his drag seriously, and you can tell by that pose shirt and by the flick of the wrist. Just so, is this from a previous drag camp that they did? Have they done this before?
I think they have. Benny Loy wrote about this. It came from their press package.
Oh, yeah. It looks like they are accepting open registration, and it's going to be only $380 to register if you can get in before May 31st. After that, the price is going to increase a little bit.
And I mean, for getting your kids off and doing something in the summer, that's, for Seattle, not that bad. I appreciate that about Mopop. Let's talk about something else that'll make the extremists upset. Bud Light. Are you ready to talk about Bud Light?
I am so ready.
I've been thinking about this all week.
It reminds me of when they were burning, was it Nike shoes, because they were in support of Colin Kaepernick or something?
Yeah, or like buying expensive jerseys to burn them.
Yeah, and it's like, what do you think you're doing? You're just supporting them. Like, when you're dumping your Bud Light into the sink, you already paid for that Bud Light. Like,
drink the beer. Yeah. Also, look, no shade to Anheuser-Busch, Bud Light's just not that good a beer. There are better light beers. I am a big fan of Rainier, if I'm being completely honest. It's just sort of the standard. It's basically water. You know, I used to drink a lot of, like, Heineken when I was in California. A lot of a lot of Modelo. Bud Light's just, it's just fine, you know? Are you a beer drinker, Lindsay?
No, I hate beer so much.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
We don't have to go into sort of my whole history with, I just had a lot of people that drank a lot of the time my entire life. So I just don't really think about it that much, but I do think about what kind of beer I do like. And Bud Light, it's fine. It's an American beer. The reason American beer tastes the way it does and the reason you have to have it cold is because sometimes it's cut with corn.
Everything's cut with corn.
Right, but it's like American beers, specifically light beers, they have corn in them. And that's why they taste the way they do, and that's why Americans like their beers cold. It's not, you don't have to drink beer cold, usually.
Interesting.
I'm not saying a frosty Bud Light isn't gonna, you know, help me out after a long day. Mm-hmm. It's a nice refreshment. Anheuser-Busch, sponsor us. Dylan Mulvaney seems to enjoy Bud Light to an extent. And people are pissed off about it. You probably have more opinions about this than I do. Yeah. I just know the beer's fine. People need to get over themselves.
Well, aside from having many opinions on what beer is tasty, because I think it all tastes like ass. Dylan Mulvaney, yeah, she's on the cover. The front. Do I spend too much time with the paper if I'm calling it the cover of the can? She is on the front of the cans, and they're actually donating $1 from every sale to, is it Glad Media? Yeah, they're actually donating $1 of every sale to Glad Media. This is just kind of akin to like Chase Bank participating in Pride. You know, it's just another corporate grab at.
It is definitely rainbow washing. Yeah. Right? Like it's 100% rainbow washing and pandering.
Yeah. I mean, still, it's making a statement in a time that's a provocative thing to do, especially with all of the anti-trans legislation we're seeing. And all of these conservatives are, you know, like we said, pouring out their beer. But what I think is hilarious, and it is mentioned in this article, is that the conservatives are now boycotting Bud Light and saying that they want Coors Light or Miller Light instead. But both of these brands have also supported the LGBT community for years and are running multiple ads to celebrate Pride. So, you know, I think if conservatives really want to boycott the LGBTQ community, they just need to quit drinking altogether.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it's probably better for everybody if we all kind of consume less alcohol, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe they'll figure that out soon.
Yeah, here's hoping. But until then, you know, if you'd like a beautiful can with Dylan Mulvaney on it, grab a Bud Light.
You know what does kill me, though, is there is a big issue with alcoholism in the LGBTQIA plus community. The queer community has always had that.
Because so many of our meeting spaces and community spaces are in bars.
Right, exactly. And it's great that they're doing this. I wish it wasn't such a gut punch every time I see, like, Rainbow Bacardi or something, you know? Or Bud Light or Coors Light ads specifically for queer people. I've lost friends to stuff like that, overindulgence or other things. And it's hard when you look back at a life. It's like, yeah, we were having a great time and then somebody OD'd. Or, yeah, we were having a great time and then somebody put a tampon full of vodka up inside them, never woke up, you know? So I wish that there were more partnerships, if they're going to be corporate rainbow washing partnerships, that were not focused around beer or alcohol. Yeah. I wish that was the case. I'm not going to say don't enjoy yourself, drink responsibly, yada yada, but like it's sort of a bittersweet, small, weird victory.
Yeah, I mean, see, like we should have antidepressants partnering with the LGBTQ community.
You know what goes great with an antidepressant?
Not a beer.
A margarita.
Oh gosh.
I'm kidding. Don't do that. So, what do you want to talk about? We got a couple of other things. I've chosen the last few topics.
Well, we could talk about anal cancer.
Let's talk about Tennessee first.
Okay.
And then we can talk about anal cancer to your heart's content.
Okay.
Tennessee City okays Pride Fest by one vote. There's a city called Franklin in Tennessee. It's a suburb of Nashville. And they're having their first Pride Fest, which is a big deal for a lot of smaller towns. And that's a huge win. But the city is also going to be trying to have a community decency policy up for a vote as well. So we'll see how that goes.
So what will happen if the community decency policy is passed? Like, will that mean they can't have drag performers at Pride?
You know, it really is hard to say. We do tend to paint in broad strokes when we look at the opposition, right? But every small town has its own local government, its own local politics, and every board and every community has its own ideas. of what is and isn't decent. So the community decency policy that's up for a vote would prohibit any act or conduct that is not consistent with generally accepted standards of behavior and conduct. That's the wording.
So that's really vague.
It's vaguely worded, you're right. And it also includes prohibition of lewd or sexually suggestive behavior and excessive and offensive intimate public displays of affection. That's not gender specific. It sounds like a holdover from when Christianity had a much stronger hold on the American South than it still does, right? So we'll see what people consider is generally accepted standard of behavior at a small town's Pride Festival. But it's happening, so we'll see what happens. I hope that we have some follow-up news on that. I'm not sure. Mike Andrew wrote that piece, and it was, again, a little breath of fresh air. It was a little nice, especially since there's a lot of like anti-drag and anti-trans legislation around that area and in Tennessee that's up for a vote on the state level. It's kind of an act of protest in that way, still going forth with the Pride parade. The Supreme Court blocked West Virginia's sports ban. That's some good news.
Yeah, that's really big news. Amy Coney Barrett and Brett Kavanaugh were among some of the justices that voted to block that.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Wild. If you had asked me to bet on it, I would not have won that bet.
Yeah, me either. I guess they can surprise us sometimes, which maybe is even more terrifying because I don't want to get my hopes up with the Supreme Court.
Hope is a painful, painful, painful ally. Another little highlight before we go into talking about your favorite topic of the week, I guess. There was a teacher who refused to use a student's preferred pronouns in Indiana and was asked to resign. And so he did. And now he's saying it's like against his Christian beliefs to be a decent human being. So we'll see how that holds up in court. It might actually be another big case, especially since pronoun usage is on a lot of people's minds these days. All right, Lindsay, the moment we've all been waiting for.
Anal cancer time.
What did you write about this week and who did you interview and why is he so handsome?
Yeah, so this week I interviewed Dr. Vlad Valsimianu, who is one of the leading researchers out of the ANCHOR study. This is a study that's been going on for the last 7 years. They were partially stationed in a couple of different locations around Seattle and Bellevue, but also around the whole United States. And the study was just kind of to figure out if there's a better way to treat and prevent anal cancer in patients that are HIV positive. So it was a really interesting interview, and I learned a lot about anal cancer and how certain STIs impact a person's likelihood of developing cancers like anal cancer, as well as cervical cancer and vaginal cancer. There's these growths that people that are positive for HPV, and that's human papillomavirus, they can develop these growths around their genital regions that are called H-cells. H-cells are what eventually become cancer. It's kind of like with anal cancer, like a skin cancer, and it can spread to other parts of the body and become very dangerous. Caught at any stage, you will be required to get chemotherapy and radiation therapy to treat it. But if caught late, you could have your whole poop area removed and have to have a bag and you aren't able to pass bowel movements on your own. It's a very difficult cancer, and it is actually one of the leading cancers that affects people that are HIV positive. So it's pretty prevalent in the LGBTQ community. And they found that when removing these growths before they become cancerous, the risks of developing anal cancer decreased tremendously. So the study was so successful, they stopped it early at just 7 years, which is about the halfway mark for the study. And everybody that was previously in the control group who hadn't had the H-cells removed went in and got their H-cells removed. And now they're just monitoring to see how the treatment affects all of these people. The treatment is being recommended by any doctor to use for people that are both HIV and HPV positive.
That is fascinating. And you know, there was a study recently that maybe we'll be covering in the near future, but Seattle is in the top 100 for sexually transmitted infections and diseases. Number 78, so low. Not one of the top like 10 or anything, but it does really affect people. You know, HPV, anal cancer, eventually. I feel like there are a lot of jokes that are here, but you were so enthusiastic about relaying this information to me. And the gravity of the situation really is a lot. So I just didn't make any. And I appreciate that you covered this because it really is very fascinating.
Yeah, of course. I thought it was so interesting. And kind of the biggest thing now is spreading awareness. So if you or somebody you know is HPV positive, and you don't have to be HIV positive as well for this to be kind of the best course of action, anybody that has some kind of immunocompromising condition, which could include lupus or even being like an organ transplant recipient, can qualify for this because you're at higher risk of developing certain cancers when your immune system is compromised. Yeah, it's great. And the process of removing these H-cells is pretty easy. It's kind of just like when you go in to get a skin tag or a wart removed, they can freeze it off, they can burn it off, but you don't need any kind of anesthesia or surgery to have that happen. And it's just a great way to prevent having to go the rest of your life passing bowel movements into a bag, which sounds horrible.
It really, truly does. A little bit of local news before we head out today. The city of Seattle is seeking representatives for its LGBTQ commission. It's a 21-member body of appointed Seattle residents who work in an advisory capacity to the mayor, city council, office for civil rights, and a bunch of other city departments. And recruitment's ongoing. So if you or a loved one have been diagnosed with wanting to be a part of the community in a political fashion, more power to you. If you want to be politically active in our community, this is a good way to do it. They are currently looking for more members. So you can go to their next meeting, which is April 20th at City Hall. They always have their meetings on the third Thursday of every month from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. I don't know how many positions are currently open, but you can also call the number on their website or email slgbtq@seattle.gov. So go out there, be part of the community. Maybe you'll show up in the pages of the SGN if you're politically active. I'd love to see it. Well, folks, I think that about does it for us today.
Yeah, we covered a lot, actually.
We've been doing that. There's a lot to cover. I've been really stoked on this lately. Is there anything you want to tell? I wanted to call them readers. Is there anything you want to tell our listeners before we head out today, Lindsay?
Yeah, just talk to your doctor about getting treatment for anal cancer, especially if you have H-cell cysts.
And talk to your therapist about wanting to be in local politics.
And talk to your dog about how much you love them.
And talk to your loved ones about how much you love dogs.
Exactly.
Go ahead and follow us on Instagram or Twitter at Seattle Gay News. You can follow our podcast specifically at radio.sgn. And you can find us online, of course, at sgn.org. Hey, do you have a question that you need answered, that you really need advice on, especially queer advice, love advice, anything of that nature? Well, you're in luck. Isabel Mata is accepting questions. If you go to our website and you go to the Ask Izzy tab, the submission form is right there on our website. Let Izzy solve your problems for you. She's good at it.
Better than therapy.
Cheaper than therapy, too.
Yeah.
All right, folks. Thank you so much for listening. Please, if you have anything you can spare, go ahead and donate. That little pink donate button at the top of sgn.org. It really does mean a lot to us when listeners and readers like yourself, members of our audience, support us in that fashion. If you don't have a couple extra bucks lying around, what you can do is just tell your friends, tell your frenemies, tell your enemies, tell your exes. That's the vibe we're bringing to this episode, I guess. Tell your exes.
Just don't tell them that you still love them.
Yeah, that's sound advice. That one threw me for a loop. Anyway, thanks for listening. We'll see you in the funny pages.
Radio SGN is hosted by A.V. Eichenbaum and Lindsay Anderson and produced by A.V. Eichenbaum. Music for this show was provided by T.R.G. Banks and Jesse Spillane, or was provided for free by Anchor. Thank you so much for listening. Check us out on sgn.org or wherever you find podcasts.
This podcast is part of the Seattle Gay News Podcasting Network.